Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. To all my fellow pastors, I've got a question for you. Does your city know that your church exists? Listen, I get it. You're preaching, you're leading, you're discipling, you're doing ministry. We are in the same boat. And let's be honest, social media and marketing, not your strong suit, not mine either. And that's probably the last thing on your mind. And that's why we chose to partner with Church Candy Marketing for our church plant, The Garden. We out here, y'all. They help churches get more actual guests walking through the doors on Sunday without you or I having to stress over ads or algorithms or trying to crack the social media code. Right now, Church Candy is helping nearly 400 churches reach their communities with simple invite ads, and it works. It's super effective. I can tell you from firsthand experience. So if you're tired of being your city's best kept secret, how about you do this? Go to churchcandy.com/Manny and book a free consultation, book a discovery call. Their team will break it all down and show you how to start seeing new faces at your church this Sunday. I'm in the trenches with you, trying to grow the church. And how about we just start a whole campaign? No more empty churches. So let's partner with Church Candy and get our churches full for the glory of Jesus. Let's go. Family, we are at the end of 2 Corinthians. I'm proud of you for getting through these amazing two books. I think that we see the heart of Paul. I think that we see the mind of Paul. I think that we see a full range of emotions. And we're going to see a lot of emotions in this last movement of the book from chapters 10, 11, 12, and 13 of 2 Corinthians. Yeah, you can just tell by Paul's words and his tone, he is fighting for this relationship. He desperately does not want the work that he did in Corinth to be in vain. Like, think about it, right? If you went to a city to plant a church and you got stoned and beat up and imprisoned in order to plant that church, the last thing you'd want are some false teachers and some itinerant ministers who have terrible intentions to like steer the church wrong. Like, it cost you something. Obviously, it cost Jesus something. And Paul just is fighting for the purity of this church. At one point, like in this section right here from chapter 10 to 13, he says, I'm going to present you like as a pure bride, like to Christ. That is my goal. To present you to Christ like as a pure bride. And I just want you to even think about the context of Corinth, that Corinth is a place that is known for sexual immorality. It's known for sexual debauchery and impurity. And he's saying, yeah, like this is the work of the gospel. Like you used to be someone, the opposite of a virgin, but I'm going to present you as a pure virgin to your husband named Jesus. That is Paul's goal. And he is trying his best throughout this letter to win them back, to him, because his leadership can be trusted and the gospel that he's preaching can be trusted. Paul is asserting his authority, but he's not territorial. He's trust Timothy to go minister and Titus to go minister and Apollos to go minister. He doesn't see these super apostles or these false teachers as some territorial threat. He sees them as a real threat because they're not teaching the truth. And he loves the believers here in Corinth. And all that stuff kind of comes through. All right. So he's got to respond to a couple of the things that these super apostles, these itinerant speakers are saying. And the first is going to come right at the top of chapter 10. And so two passages, one, 10 verse 1, chapter 10 verse 1 says, Paul, who am timid when face to face with you, but bold towards you when away. Okay. I beg you that when I come, I may not be as bold. Like, I don't want to be as bold Like, what are you talking? This is a dumb thing to even say. I don't want to be as bold as I expect to be towards some people who think that we live by the standards of this world. And then the next, in verse 10, he's going to echo the same exact thing. So he's going to start responding to the actual accusations. Verse 10, for some say his letters are weighty and forceful, but in person, he is unimpressive and his speaking amounts to nothing. So what is Paul's response to this? Here it is. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. And we will be ready to punish every act of disobedience once your obedience is complete. So here's what Paul is saying. He's saying, of course I have the ability to be bold in person. Of course I have the ability to not be timid when I'm with you in person. But I'd rather save all that boldness for spiritual warfare. And really, I'm not about to act as if there isn't a spiritual power behind these super apostles, these false teachers that have come into the Corinthian church and are trying to steer you away from Jesus and away from me. I'm not going to stoop down to their level and fight them or be bold to you. Like, I'm not going to do that. And then here's the next thing that Paul is responding to, okay, is in chapter 11. It says this in verse 5, chapter 11, verse 5. So the first thing that Paul responds to is, hey, you're bold in your letters, you're timid in person, and Paul kind of responds to that. Here's the next thing that Paul responds to. It's in chapter 11, verse 5. I do not think I am in the least inferior to those super apostles. I may indeed be untrained as a speaker, but I do have knowledge. Okay, we have made this perfectly clear to you in every way. So the other thing that these super apostles are saying is that Paul is inferior to us because he's untrained. He's an untrained sophist, an untrained orator, an untrained rhetorician. And Paul is like, whether I'm untrained or not, I have knowledge. I may not have the wisdom of a philosopher, and I'm not here to teach philosophy. So stop comparing me to these orators or these public speakers. We have made this perfectly clear to you in every way, okay? Remember the analogy with my son, right? Every time I try to tell him that this is a cheetah or this is a tiger, he goes, lion. It's like, buddy, I've made it perfectly clear that that's not a lion, okay? So we're just going to stop having this conversation. Paul, again, is getting hit with this, aren't you an orator? Why are you untrained? Now, sophists had schools. There's a schools where you could learn how to be a trained rhetorician or trained rhetor or trained orator. And they're just kind of like, yeah, this guy's not even trained. To which Paul is like, yeah, that's not what I'm even trying to do. The last thing that they're really accusing Paul of is that he has a job that he works with his hands. He's a tent maker. Like, if he was really like a trained rhetor, number one, he would be bold, like face to face. Two, he'd be trained. You would know what school he's from. And three, he'd be doing this as his full-time gig. He wouldn't have to be a tent maker. So Paul then is going to respond to that. And here's what Paul's response is. Verse 7 of chapter 11. Was it a sin for me to lower myself in order to elevate you by preaching the gospel of God to you free of charge? How are you complaining that I didn't charge you? Like, what kind of backwards world are we living in? How are you offended that you didn't pay me, but that I was a tent maker? Like, in what world is that? Like, how? Huh? Okay. So was it a sin for me to lower myself in order to elevate you by preaching the gospel of God to you free of charge? I robbed other churches by receiving support from them so as to serve you. And when I was with you and needed something, I was not a burden to anyone. For the brothers who came from Macedonia supplied what I needed. That's the Philippian church, by the way, who are super generous towards Paul. Actually, we get the whole letter of Philippians as a thank you letter for the money that they've been sending him while he's been in prison. I have kept myself from being a burden to you in any way and will continue to do so. It's essentially Paul saying, I really don't trust you guys enough to take money from you. I trust the Philippian church, so I let them support me. Not only does the churches in Macedonia, not only have they given graciously and abundantly to the offering that I'm taking up for Jerusalem, but they also support me. And actually, I was robbing them by getting support from them and ministering to you. Like, how do you have these crazy, like, notions? And again, you're not thinking like Christians. You're thinking like Corinthians. And this is the countercultural aspect of the gospel, that the gospel, it is compatible with every culture, but then it challenges every culture that it's in. And to be honest, there are ways in which we, most of us who are watching this content are probably American, who you don't even realize how American your worldview is. But to be quite honest, American culture is very Corinthian. That's why we're so susceptible to celebrity culture within church. That's just American. We have an entertainment value, an entertainment-based culture that values the teaching, or we value entertainment in general, and we can begin to see pastors and leaders as entertainers. And so we're susceptible to this stuff. We talk out of both sides of our mouth. We don't want pastors to take part in celebrity culture, but also when pastors act like rock stars, we're all about it. We flock to their churches. We love this stuff. Like, so it's kind of like Paul's like, wait a second. You would be more impressed by me if I made you pay me, but you're not even generous to the church in Jerusalem when I'm taking up an offering for them. Like, you guys are so backwards. You don't know what you actually want. You think carnally, and you think based on the culture that you're a part of. Culture is kind of like, you know, the water that fish are in or the air that birds are in. You don't even realize it. Like, we don't realize a lot of times how capitalistic, like, our culture is just because we eat, sleep, breathe, and live in capitalism. It's not until you go somewhere else and you realize, oh, wow, I've just thought that that was a Christian idea, but really that's a capitalistic idea. Okay, cool. Or how democratic we think. We just think in terms of democracy because that's the air that we breathe. It's the water that we swim in. And then you realize, oh, okay, that's not necessarily inherently Christian or not Christian. It's just very American. It's hard for any culture to begin to see not just how the gospel is compatible with their culture, but how the gospel challenges their culture. Bible nerds, I have an announcement. My brand new book, Crushing Chaos, releases May of 2025 and pre-orders are officially open. When I began to learn Genesis in its proper context, I learned that the creation account is not primarily about God creating something out of nothing, but rather God bringing divine order to the chaos of the cosmos. That one nugget was a game changer for me because I've been preaching to all the kids in my youth group that peace was a solution for their anxiety. But really, God's solution to chaos is never peace, but rather order. Peace isn't something that you stumble into. It's something that you intentionally step into. And that starts with aligning your life with God's order. I think that this book is a game changer. It's nerdy, it's practical, it provides a very contextual understanding of the book of Genesis, and if you grab a copy, you'll learn why there's a huge dragon on the cover. Head to the link in the show notes to pre-order, or head to crushingchaos.com to see the really dope trailer that we've made for this book. I think it's time for you to crush the chaos in your life, and that starts with grabbing a copy of this book. Now, back to the podcast. We didn't talk about Paul's thorn. Okay, there's a lot of debate about the thorn. What is Paul's thorn? Because this comes up in this chunk from 10 to 13. one of the most compelling things that I've heard is it's a physical ailment. There's this moment in Lystra where Paul gets stoned and everybody thinks he's dead. I could totally see how maybe there was something about that stoning that left him injured and he never fully recovered. Maybe it's his eyesight that never fully recovers. And he prays like that God would take this thorn away, but instead of God taking it away, God gives him grace. And he gives him grace to endure the thorn instead of removing the thorn. And of course, why does this thing about thorns find its way into this section? Well, because Paul is saying, hey, like, I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed of my thorn. I'm not ashamed of the fact that I'm a tent maker. I'm not ashamed of the fact that I'm not a trained orator. I'm not ashamed of any of that stuff. And like, I'm not trying to lie to you and present myself to you as someone who I'm not. There's this moment where Paul says, you know what? Since these super apostles want me to boast, and since they're boasting to you, how about we do a little boasting? Let's boast. Whatever anyone else dares to boast about, this is verse 21 of chapter 11. Whatever anyone else dares to boast about, I'm speaking as a fool, I also dare to boast about. Verse 22. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they Abraham's descendants? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? I'm out of my mind to talk like this. I am more. I've worked much harder. Been in prison more frequently. So he immediately, he doesn't go, let me boast about my car and my house and all my accolades and my degree. Nope. Immediately goes to, I've been in prison. Been flogged more severely. Been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews 40 lashes minus one. 3 times been beaten with rods. Once was pelted with stones. 3 times was shipwrecked. Spent a night and a day in the open sea. I've been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at the sea, in danger from false believers. I've labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I've known hunger and thirst and have gone without food. I've been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Who is weak and I do not feel weak? Who is led into sin and I do not inwardly burn? So he's saying, I care about y'all so much. And he's like, hey, I was lowered in a basket from a window in the wall and slipped through his hands. Man, when they tried to arrest me, like, guys, you want me to boast about all these accolades? Guess what I'm going to boast about? The stuff that none of these other apostles would ever boast about. I'm going to boast about the things you want me to be ashamed of. And so, man, the fact how he turns this on his head is just really, really, really cool. We end the whole book with him saying that he's going to visit them for a third time, that he plans a third visit. This is chapter 13, okay? He says, hey, I already gave you a warning when I was with you the second time. I now repeat it while I'm absent. On my return, I will not spare those who sinned earlier or any of the others, since you are demanding proof that Christ is speaking through me. He is not weak in dealing with you. He is powerful among you. For to be sure, he was crucified in weakness, yet he lives by God's power. Likewise, we are weak in him, yet by God's power, we will live with him in our dealing with you. Examine yourselves to see whether you are in faith. Test yourselves. Do you not realize that Christ Jesus is in you? Unless, of course, you fail the test. So chapter 13, verse 1, this will be my third visit to you. Every matter must be established by the testimony of 2 or 3 witnesses. He's like, yo, there's rumors about me. People are spreading false narratives about me. Then get 2 or 3 people together when I come. And if you got an issue, let it be established by 2 or 3 witnesses. You know, Paul's being so gangster and so loving at the same time, which leads us to our timeless truth for the day. Paul says, we are weak and we're strong. like at the same time, and says we're modeling that after Jesus. Weak on the cross, strong in the resurrection. That sometimes as a leader, there's a temptation to only be a lamb or only be a lion. And the gospel says you can be the lion and the lamb. People need strength from you, but they also need meekness and humility from you and gentleness from you as well. And Paul, you can see him holding those two things in tension, using both strength and authority, but also using gentleness as he wins this church back to his heart. So we're done with 2 Corinthians and on to the next book. I'm proud of you. I'll see you right here tomorrow as we continue to read through the Bible this year. Love you guys. Peace. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bible Department podcast. You can find us online and learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you enjoyed this episode and want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow.